بشم دیگه بی تو خستم بی 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 تو فدار بشم دیگه بی تو خستم
Small, کوچک,
smaller,
کوچکتر,
smallest,
کوچکتری.
Six birds to Persia.
And good afternoon. You're here with Farry Bradley on Six Pillars to Persia, as usual, on Monday at 1:30. And today I'm very honoured to be joined by Camilla Batman-Gelij. Did I say it right?
Yes, absolutely.
Woo! Oh, you're off mic there. And Dawn also from a kids company that Camilla has founded.
Hello,
Dawn. How are you doing?
Yeah, fine. Thank
you. Tell us a bit about Kids Company. What goes on?
Well, Kids Company is a charity, and we offer support to some 12,000 children. And the way we do it is that we work in 33 schools across London, offering therapeutic and social work programs. And we have two centers at street level where the kids are self-referring off the street.
Right.
And what's unique about our organization is that in excess of 90% is children asking for help directly. So it's not reliant on an adult noticing a child's difficulty and taking the child to appointments. Mm. We create our services in such a way that if a child asks for help, they can access it themselves.
How do kids hear about Kids Company? Is it word of mouth, through posters?
Yeah, word of mouth. We have kids that bring their friends in, so they hear about it on the street or at school. And that's the really, really important thing, the self-referral, because people think in this country, oh, we've got social services. But if you're afraid of your parents and you have a social worker asking you, do you need help in front of your parents, you're not going to say that you do. And that's why Kids Company is so unique.
Right. So there's a kind of protection, secrecy for the children. They don't have to tell the parents.
Well,
if
it's child-centred, and most services are not child-centred.
Mm, that's a good point. And there has been, I mean, a lot of cases where the social services let children down.
Well, in this country, there's some 552,000 children a year referred to child protection. At the moment, they're taking 30,700 of them and putting them on the child protection register. That means that the bulk of the others are left outside. And a small portion of those are given an assessment. But if you live in a poor area, and let's say your parents are heroin addicts and you're left without food, but you're not being beaten, then it would mean that the social work department in that area might not actually take your case on, because you're not being beaten. So social work departments set their own guidelines for what cases they will take in. Mm. And the more deprived the neighborhood, the more the thresholds of intake are higher. So they'll say they'll take cases where there is physical abuse, but the child has to be beaten with an implement. Or they'll take sexual abuse, but it has to be penetration. You know, so they make decisions like that based on money and not, as the law has it, on child protection guidelines only.
How did you get into all this, Camilla? I mean, how did you become so informed?
Well, I grew up in Iran, and I remember being 9 years old and telling my mother that I wanted to do this, that I wanted to work with children who were vulnerable. And, you know, I was born into quite a wealthy family, and my childhood was, you know, we had two drivers, police drivers, who drove us around. And I thought that was completely normal, that every child was supposed to get kidnapped, so you had to have protection. And that was my understanding of childhood. But I think I had a very spiritual dimension. I think I was born with it. And I had a grandfather who was an amazing pediatrician. And I remember him being so profoundly graceful and completely different to the grandfather, who had made a lot of money and was very powerful. So I felt like the grandfather, who was a pediatrician, had a quality that I liked and I wanted to aspire to. And when I said to my mother, I want to do this kind of work, I forced her to become a member of a psychological association. So the journal of child development used to arrive every Wednesday, is to climb into bed and try and read this journal. So that's how it started. It was really a vocation.
It sounds a bit like Buddha's story, doesn't it? He grew up in a very protected environment and then at one point said, I want to go and work with the world. I can't live here in this paradise.
Yeah, and, you know, they used to tease me. They used to say, shut up, Mother Teresa, go and run your orphanage and, you know, my brothers and kind of. And now I sort of point my finger in their face and say, look what happened. But it was definitely a vocation, definitely. And I'm glad I did it. I have been hugely enriched by getting to know some amazing children.
And also your story wasn't exactly easy when you were studying. I know that you had to use a dictaphone for your degree because writing posed some difficulty for you. And that must be itself a very inspiring story for children who think, you know, I don't have the literacy to go and pursue something like that. And you can say, well, look, I managed with a dictaphone. They are flexible in these places.
Yeah, I was very lucky because I was born very premature and I was 1 kilogram. And in Iran, they didn't put me in an incubator because they decided that I was going to die, so they sent me home to die. And I survived, but that left me with some endocrine and neurological problems. So a part of that was that I've struggled to write in all 3 languages I spoke. I can't write properly at all. And even now I can't use a keyboard, so I have a day secretary, a night secretary, and a weekend secretary to dictate everything to.
Wow.
And I was very lucky because Warwick University gave me an unconditional offer and allowed me to do my degree on tape. And because I got a first class degree there, then the psychotherapy training allowed me to use a tape recorder and so on. So I think that if you give communication tools to children that are appropriate to their needs, there is no reason why a child can't flourish.
That's very interesting. And your theories about children and how the government deals with the difficulties they're facing have been quite inspiring as well, haven't they? You've got people on board with Kids Company like Alan Yentob, all the conservative leaders for some reason. Why is it particularly the Conservative Party that are coming to your door?
No, Labour are coming to our door as well. I think if you look at the government's strategy to diminish youth crime in this country, they will admit that in the last 10 years, they've made absolutely no progress. And last year, on the streets of England, 27 children were killed through either knife or gun crime. But more worrying is that nearly 2,000 children within a year have either been stabbed or shot, but they didn't necessarily die. Mm. So the figures are quite incredible in this country. And the reason this is happening is that the social care structures have broken down around these children. When the biological parent can't take care of them anymore, the state isn't able to step in properly. And a lot of these families are very vulnerable because they don't have an extended family to step in and protect them. There isn't the grandmother or the aunt. So you get children from a very young age who are severely traumatized and who then end up on the streets surviving their childhood. And the local drug dealer, in effect, becomes a perverse social worker in their lives. And the government, I think, is beginning to realize that the problem is much more complex than simply punishing these children. And through the process of punishment, they will learn to behave better. So it's looking for solutions. And because of that, they're going to a number of projects. I think we're one of them. And we have probably one of the best results with children who present with very dangerous behaviors.
So they come in and they get involved with Kids Company, they do arts work and group work. And what would you say was a good result then?
Dawn, what do you think is a good result?
I think being engaged with the workers is a good result. It's not necessarily about degrees and GCSEs. It's the fact that these you know, we see it every day, kids just sitting down, having a conversation, being calm. It's little things like that. And then we do get the outcomes, which is the buzzword of the moment. Like, people then go on to do the GCSEs and the degrees, but it's not a fairy tale, and it takes time. But I think if you have a kid that couldn't even sit next to an adult and trust them, and then they're having a conversation, or they're playing pool, or they're doing a piece of art together, I think that's a result.
I agree, totally. And it would be hard to disagree with that at all. Also, it makes me think of children with confidence issues, you know, when they feel perhaps that they can't go somewhere unknown. You know, what's it like to get involved with something like Kids Company and then feel like it's your second home or possibly your first home, you know?
That's the point. I think we underestimate, especially in the Western culture, the importance of love and the importance of care and attachment is hugely underestimated. I think the British culture is very ashamed of talking about emotion and about love as something that you articulate in your political and national outcomes.
Wasn't it a Victorian hang-up left over?
Yeah, it's that. And I think they have a very distorted belief system that punishment works. But the evidence shows that it doesn't, because actually if you look at rates of reoffending in children who've been locked up, it's 87% plus reoffend. So punishment doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's, you get in the 80% plus is also the statistics for adult prison outcomes. So we've got to come up with something else. And I think what's very important is for children who are deprived of love, of stability, and of good quality care, the most important thing is to create an alternative family structure at street level. And that family structure either strengthens the biological parent by giving them support, substitutes the care of the biological parent. For example, some of our staff, male staff, function a bit like a father in these children's lives whilst their biological mothers are taking care of them.
Mm.
Or you completely substitute it. We have children whose parents are so disturbed and so addicted that really our staff are functioning in a parenting capacity. You can't replace the bond between the biological child and the parent, but you can strengthen the care structure around those children and give them the resilience to participate in civil society in a meaningful way.
What do you think of foster care? What's your experience? Has that worked? Has it not worked?
Some children benefit from foster care, but actually the most disturbed children cannot cope in a cooped up house. Foster care is complicated because it all depends on which other children are in the house, or the biological children in the house. And I think it's there's a shortage of really skilled foster carers to deal with the most disturbed children. So foster care is a good idea where it works, but the reality is that there aren't enough foster carers, and some children are beyond the fostering structure. They need something completely different.
So when you have these meetings with these politicians, do they take into account the things you say, or does it merely seem like a kind of press effort on their behalf?
They're beginning to take into account, because they're beginning to notice that independent evaluations are showing us to be 97% effective. We have an 87% impact on crime reduction. They can see that 83 to 85% of our children come to our doors severely traumatized. And I think Dawn can explain to you what the children go through, because I think people don't understand when you say severely traumatized what that can mean, you know. And I think Dawn is best placed to explain what that can mean for a child.
I think it's the reason that people don't exactly know what severely traumatized means is because we've got this language about child abuse that doesn't actually say what happens anymore. Everyone knows about child abuse, but people don't really accept that there are children that are being starved by their parents, that children that are being pimped out for an addicted mother or an addicted father, children who are used by paedophile rings to fund their parents' addiction. That's the sort of levels of trauma that we're talking about. You know, simple things like being told every day that you're stupid, that you're worthless by, you know, perhaps a mother with mental health problems who just can't stand the sight of her own children. These children are growing up, you know, all over London and all over the UK. And they are severely traumatised, and that's what it means. It's not just a clip round the ear hole. Mm. And I think, you know, at Kids Company, that's what we're seeing. We're getting these children, and the local authorities are not able to manage them. And so they hear about us through word of mouth. And I think that, you know, and I speak as someone who's got personal experience of that sort of childhood as well. And I think, you know, you have to start listening to the kids and the young people a bit more, because it is self-referral that we want. We want somewhere where we can just go, that it's not dependent on that adult in the life that's abusing us, that it's somewhere that we can just go and present and access the services. I think the thing is, we underestimate children in this country, that they wouldn't be able to just access help, and it's always dependent on an adult. So
it's true with their Childline. When the Childline adverts first came out, it was always children with phones. And it was, I think, just before mobile phone boom happened. And I remember thinking, how would the child ever be able to pick up the phone and remember this number and phone Childline anyway? It should be a number like 8 for Childline.
Yeah. And, you know, Childline had exactly the same problem as Kids Company, because it was based on self-referrals. It had funding problems, because the bottom line is, a child who asks for help directly isn't being paid for by an adult. There's no commissioning agent paying for that child. So if you want to sustain a self-referral model, your problem is, where's your money going to come from? Mm-hmm. Because, like Kids Company, is perpetually, we're in a state of begging all the time to try and get funding in to help the children who are pleading for help, because the agencies that are supposed to step in and protect them aren't able to do it. And, you know, the other important thing is that this incredible advancement in brain research. And now we know that if you've been neglected, there are changes in your brain that make it very difficult for you to be able to calm yourself down. And if, in addition to that, the emotional centers of your brain are storing traumatic memories, memories of being battered, beaten, or seeing violent incidents, basically, you have a brain functioning that is completely dysregulated. It can't balance itself out at all. It can't manage its emotions. It can't manage the imagery that runs through the brain. You know, these children find it very difficult to sleep. They find it very difficult to calm down. So we're going to have to develop more sophisticated ways of helping these children, because it's not about them choosing to not behave themselves. It's about them not having the neurochemical capacity to control their own behavior. And we've got to give them that repertoire of control by helping them understand what's happening to them and why they're behaving in such terrified and terrorizing ways, and then help them calm down.
That's a very interesting subject, neuroscience and how we're affected by our emotions. I mean, I was first exposed to it with that film, What the Bleep Do We Know? Have you seen it? It's a documentary.
No, yeah.
It explains how we become addicted to different emotions because of the chemicals that the brain lets off when we have that emotion, and therefore we get addicted to being angry or something like that, and that's what we're used to. So it's a kind of way of understanding it so you can master yourself, I suppose. So, Camilla, what would you say with the West-East thing? I mean, how come it's Western cultures? Where is it that Eastern cultures succeed? Do you think it's more the family unit being... For example, in Iran, they're very, very family-orientated, very welcoming people as a whole. Do you think as many children fall through the net there?
I think Iran's problem is very interesting, because those who take care of their children well treasure them. You know, so childhood in that network is highly valued, and, you know, it's quite rare to find child abuse in that setting. There's another set who actually don't protect their children, and who are also impacted by drug abuse and, you know, all the other issues that go with it. And, you know, then child abuse is quite prevalent there. So Iran presents two extremes, if you like, the absolute ideal and an equally dysfunctional potential for child abuse. But culturally, I think the Iranian culture is very warm, and there is the involvement of the extended family, and children are very much included in the day-to-day life of the family. Whereas the British culture separates children often from its mainstream functioning. And I think that's where the problems arise, in alienation and in not being able to see it from the perspective of the child.
Interesting. I mean, I wonder how we could promote the extended family values here. And I mean, I know it's been gone on about a lot, you know, they're saying promote family values, because they feel the state is supplementing the erosion of the family. But at the same time, people maybe have forgotten what they could gain by having their grandparents near at hand and their uncles and aunties near at hand. And they're happy to run off in a kind of selfish kind of capsule of thinking of mother, father and child, I suppose. How could we help them, people generally, look to their own family for some answers?
I think what's happened in the Western culture is that the human individual has become the commodity. So you're supposed to structure yourself and market yourself in the service of, you know, earning money. And what that means is that only those who have capacities for achievement and survival that suits the economy are promoted. And the vulnerable and those who are not economically viable, if you like, are relegated to the sidelines, hidden and rejected. And the mistake about this is what we value, because we value those who can earn money, but we don't value those who can give nurturing and care and wisdom and thoughtfulness, which can come from someone who's old or who's disabled or who may not be economically gaining money, but who could nevertheless enrich all our lives.
Do you think the populace realises this, that this is what's happening, that our values have shifted so much that all our taxes and our government move towards treating people as commodities and have no humanism in their kind of application of where taxes should go and what rules should be set out?
I don't think the government realises that it's the side effect of too much greed, isn't it? It's people thinking that money will solve everything. So everyone runs after the money. And the thing that's really valuable, which is good quality loving care, doesn't get the light shone on it. And because it doesn't get promoted and valued, then it's diminishing in its functioning in our culture, in the Western culture here. So I think the government's got to put in new vocabulary. You know, we've got to be talking about kindness, about compassion, about thoughtfulness, not about academic achievement, economic prosperity. You know, of course you need academic achievement, economic prosperity to sustain a society and its functioning, but not at the expense of the emotional values. And that's where it's gone wrong, because nobody articulates the emotional values. They're taken for granted.
So if you wanted to, do you think you could get an audience with Gordon Brown? Kind of give him 5 minutes of, what would you call it, latitudinal thinking?
Well, I could probably invite him to come and visit us. You know, I wouldn't be so presumptuous as to say I could get an audience with him, but I am sure that he is interested in children and he's very committed and that he's communicated to us.
What did David Cameron want when he came to see you?
Again, I think all these people are wanting to know
what's going on
and what solutions they could apply. We've been visited by international care providers, you know, from Russia, from Africa, from North America. You know, they all want to know what to do with these very disturbed children and what methods to use. And they want to understand why these children are behaving in this way and why punishment is not working.
Mm. Well, I wish you all the best with Kids Company. It's a really worthy cause. And Dawn, thanks for coming today. It's been really good to meet you. So if people want to come down, where should they go if they want to self-refer?
If people want to self-refer, they can go down to 1 Kenbury Street off Cold Harbour Lane in South London, opposite King's College Hospital. You need to be under the age of 23. And if anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can contact me on Camilla, with 1 L, at kidsco.org.uk. And please don't ask me to find you a husband or a wife. I don't do that.
Do you get a lot of requests for that?
I do.
How bizarre. Is Camilla with 1 M as well?
1 M, yeah. Camilla, C-A-M-I-L-A, at kidsco.org.uk.
It's great that there are a lot of free internet portals around the... Have you seen them along the along the riverbank?
No.
There are these little... You wouldn't notice them if you were just rushing by. But you can access free internet and send an email there.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's quite
brilliant.
Dotted around the city.
That's so important for poor families that don't have access to computers.
And libraries also have a lot of free internet.
Yeah.
But then you have to go through kind of process of registering for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure whatever difficulties are out there... Together, you'll get through it all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great results from Kids Company.
Thank you very much. It's the kids that do it. We only assist.
Okay, well, that was Six Pillars. We'll be repeated on Saturday night at 9:30, and all the shows are podcast on the Resonance FM website. We're going to go out with a track by Flex Unger, who works with Persian musicians in America, and this is their piece, No Tarof in Ghetto.
Thank you.